This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Brian Wheeler is the Executive Director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, joins us every Tuesday to talk growth and development. How are you doing today?
Good.
You having a nice weekend?
We've been doing this over a year now.
Get out.
I think we
are. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Get out.
I'll have to go back and see when we started.
Really?
It's been a long time.
Wow. Wonder what did we talk about at first? I know I taped it somewhere. There's a recording of us talking growth and development. It's going to be interesting tapes to go back and listen one day, you know, 100 years from now, to two yokels sitting around in Charlottesville talking about growth and development. Very interesting. Brian Wheeler, of course, the executive director at Charlottesville Tomorrow. It's online at cvilletomorrow.org. Let's talk first local elections. Folks know that Charlottesville Tomorrow provides an election, local elections guide every year. And of course, this year, big elections taking place in the city and the county. We've got three open seats on the Charlottesville City Council, one of which Mayor David Brown is running for re-election. So
that's right.
He will likely be re-elected. There's really two open seats there that are the first-time candidates are vying for. In the county, the Board of Supervisors in Albemarle County, there's also three open seats.
Also three seats. Those are in magisterial districts, so they're not at-large seats like in the city of Charlottesville, where everybody can vote for a candidate. In the county, it'll only be in the Scottsville, Ravana, and Whitehall districts where people can vote.
Are each of the three candidates running for re-election?
They are. So that's Ken Boyd in the Ravana District, who's current chair of the Board of Supervisors. David Wyant, who's vice chair in Whitehall, is running for re-election. And Lindsay Dorier, who has long represented the Scottsville District, is seeking another term.
And, of course, each of those in the county, each of those running for re-election already has folks running against them.
That's right. And this is a real difference between the city and county elections this cycle. A lot of interesting things are going on, Coy. We've got the city moving to a November election cycle. But right now, the city Republicans have told Charlottesville Tomorrow, as of today, that they do not have a candidate to run for city council.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding.
What's the deal?
And
I'm shocked. There are a lot of smart, really creative Republicans in the city of Charlottesville. And, you know, yes, there's more Democrats than Republicans in Charlottesville, but that doesn't mean you wouldn't win.
And what that means in the city is the contest is going to be for the nomination at the Democratic Party level, and that's coming up on June 2nd. And this calendar for all the election events is up on our website. So June 2nd is when the Democrats will be picking their candidates, having their nominating convention. There will be three or four candidate forums between now and then. And the first one of those is coming up this week on the 10th. And that's at Walker Upper Elementary School, 7 o'clock p.m. on the 10th. And so the community can start getting a look at these candidates. Obviously, given there are five people running for three seats in the city, these candidate forums are going to be very important. And everyone needs to adjust to this new schedule. You know, the city residents are used to electing their elected officials in June, and now they're going to be nominating officials to run in November.
All right. And you'll have a complete podcast on Charlottesville Tomorrow website of these candidate forums, right?
And we will.
So if you can't get there, you'll have the complete audio.
Audio,
and
video.
Even video. Video.
And transcripts.
Very. You're kidding. Gosh. That's pretty
cool.
It's
very important. We got a lot.
I mean, you're doing more than the local media is doing, Brian.
Well, it's more of a C-SPAN kind of coverage, gavel to gavel, start to finish of these events. And our hope is that's a resource then not only for the voters, but also for the media.
Yeah.
They can go back and check on what statements were made when and use that as an archive.
That's awesome.
We've gotten a lot of positive feedback over the past two elections where we did that in the city and the county. Now, in the county, we have a new candidate. The news last Friday was that Thomas Loach, a frequent caller to this program.
Tom from Crozet.
Tom from Crozet is running for supervisor in the Whitehall district.
Wow.
So he is going up against the incumbent, David Wyant, and then Ann Malik, who is a Democratic challenger. David Wyant is a Republican. Tom Loach is going to run as an independent. So this is shaping up to be the only three-way race.
So there won't be a primary. As we know, as of right now, there won't be a primary for that race.
There will not be, because no party has more than one candidate. seeking the nomination. So the expectation is Mr. Wyan will get the Republican nomination, Ms. Malik will get the Democratic nomination, and then any independents can jump in at any point between now and June 12th. So right now it's a three-way race. Now the Scottsville race is currently three-way, but two of those people are seeking the Democratic nomination. So Kevin Fletcher is trying to get the Democratic nomination from Lindsay Doerier, and that will happen next week. The county Democrats will be meeting to make that decision on the 14th at 6 p.m. at the county office building.
Interesting.
So that's what's shaping up. It's getting more exciting.
More
contest in November in the county, more contest immediately at this nominating convention in the city for their slate of candidates.
And, of course, growth and development, I'm guessing, is going to figure central in all of these, every single one of these races.
Well, it should. And that is a, you know, when the city and county both survey their residents, concerns about growth and development are high in the list of things that they want careful attention paid to. So I think it will be a critical issue in the campaign. And I think it's good then that we have this weekly talk and help inform the public about some of those issues. Again, Charlottesville Tomorrow is not endorsing anybody. And for the most part on these big issues, we aren't picking a side either. We're just trying to get the information out there so that people can make an informed vote.
And interesting that Tom Loach is running, and I'm sure he'll be running on growth and development. Ann Malik, the Democratic, is obviously running on growth. She's running on, I can't understand it. No growth, slow growth. I get it all confused, but they don't, you know, when it boils right down to it, they don't agree with what David Wyatt from the Whitehall District is doing on the Board of Supervisors.
Well, and of course, Coy, any politician's going to shun those labels. They don't want to be cornered as one or the other. And in fact, you know, Tom Loach is blogging today saying that he doesn't think he deserves the no growth label because he was somebody who was actively involved in supporting the Crozet Master Plan. He was involved in those committees, and the intention behind the Crozet Master Plan was to grow the community as a designated growth area from a population of about 3,000 to a population of 12,000. So Mr. Loach would say, you know, he has been actively involved in trying to plan Crozet's future. Where he, you know, has said in the past he differs with the current board is on how far that's going to go. The current Board of Supervisors has said Crozet might grow to 24,000 people. That would give it a density similar to downtown Charlottesville. You know, that would certainly be an issue in his campaign. But he's going to run a campaign where he's coming out of the growth area. He lives in the growth area, and one of the things he said in his letter to the editor at the Crozet Gazette was that he will have to live with the consequences of whatever decisions are made in the Crozet growth area. The other two candidates,
versus David Wyatt, who
and Ann Malik, who both live in the rural area,
right?
So it's, you know, they're bringing different things to the table. Of course, observers of this election, you know, will say sometimes a three-way race, you know, will the two people may split an opposition vote to an incumbent. We've seen that happen, of course, in other races.
Which would work to the incumbent's favor in this race.
That's right. That's a possibility.
Yeah. Interesting.
We'll see what happens.
Remind us again, Brian, when the candidate forums are, the ones that are coming up most immediately in the future, so folks have a chance to write this down and they can be there. And, of course, you can also go to your website. You've got it all listed there.
Yeah. The first one is this Thursday, and that's a city council Democratic candidate forum. Again, there are no Republican candidates right now for city council. And that's going to be at Walker Upper Elementary School in the Media Center, 7 o'clock on this Thursday night. That's the first city council forum. Then on the 14th, May 14th, Albemarle County has a Democratic caucus for all the county candidates. So everyone from clerk to sheriff to the supervisor seats. It's all going to happen at once. The groups will have to break up into their different districts and vote accordingly. And then the next one after that is a neighborhood city council candidate forum being held by the Fry Springs Neighborhood Association. That's a neighborhood that we've talked about right near Biscuit Run off of Old Lynchburg Road. And Fry Springs has a lot of concerns about growth and development and transportation issues. They've invited all the candidates to come to Fry Springs Beach Club and talk with them about the issues. That'll be on May 15th. So those are the first three that are coming up.
Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, joins us every Tuesday to talk growth and development. Places 29, remind us again what it is And it's been making news lately because there's a lot of business owners out there who aren't very happy with it.
Yeah, we previewed this last week, and the Board of Supervisors met last week, Wednesday. And this sort of came up under other business, which is something they do at the very beginning of the meetings now. They also do it at the end, but it's an opportunity for a board member to raise a concern. Then it was addressed in public comment. There was a letter from the North 29 Business Council, and that got this whole discussion going. Places 29 is the master planning process for the 29 North Corridor. It's let's figure out for the next 20 years how that's going to grow and develop in a way that is quality growth. How are we going to take care of transportation? What kind of uses do we want when we redevelop something? And what's the plan? So this, there's been a team of consultants working with county staff over the past couple of years on this. And at this point, the business community came forward with this letter and said they were concerned about the direction it was heading. One of their chief concerns, as I talked about last week, was the proposal to have grade-separated interchanges or overpasses on Route 29 and the disruption that might have at some key intersections, especially Hydraulic Road and Rio Road. Hydraulic, of course, is where Albemarle Place will be going in, and so there will already be a lot happening in that neighborhood, so to speak. Those concerns were brought up by the chair of the Board of Supervisors, Ken Boyd, who said he had received the letter and that he had his own concerns about the process. He was skeptical in general, I guess I would say, that and was asking, should the community be pursuing this if we don't feel like there's buy-in from the community, in this case, the business community? And
because the business community doesn't like the idea of all these overpasses out in front of their stores?
Right. The concern of the business community is that instead of the plan creating a better Main Street, that it will create an expressway, that the people driving by them will bypass the business district, or if they get off of this expressway, they will have difficulty navigating through the parallel roads. However, you know, the point of these parallel roads, like Hillsdale Drive, like Berkmar Extended,
that makes it easier to get in and out of the stores, doesn't it?
Should make it easier to get in and out.
Yeah.
The North Charlottesville Business Council has also invited national experts to speak to them about how these developments can be more successful. They can make more money if it's built right. And I think what the planners are looking for is the opportunity to get those best ideas on the table. And right now, as I mentioned last week, I think they're sort of talking past each other. You have to recognize, and this was pointed out by one of the supervisors, that the Chamber of Commerce and the North Charlottesville Business Council both have as a transportation priority a western bypass around Charlottesville. So they would much rather see that built than business be disrupted on 29 itself with grade separation. I thought Dennis Rooker made a great point. He said that when these interchanges are talked about, it's always like they're a spaceship, you know, coming in that nobody has ever seen one before. And he said, but, you know, if you drive on the 250 bypass and you go under Derry Road, you go under Park Street, you go under Locust, those are overpasses or grade separations that make the 250 bypass much more successful than certain parts of 29 at certain times of day. So the question is, how can they, at what cost will these things require? What kind of investment will they require? How can they be built in a way that, you know, does as little disruption as possible? In fact, we interviewed the one of the engineers at the county who's putting together the hydraulic interchange proposal, and they have basically picked a different method of construction that should make it easier to build it without disturbing too much traffic heading north-south. So there are ways, I think, if we get the best people looking at these things, we can get some good ideas on the table and figure out how to do this right.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville tomorrow, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070.
What's happening next with that is in June, the Board of Supervisors will get an update June 6th, and scheduled in June will be work sessions in front of the County Planning Commission. So there's still plenty of time for this to be talked about, lots of work sessions, lots of discussion ahead.
Yeah. One thing that you said that really struck me was the fact that the county had been working with outside consultants, which is, people should know, that doesn't come cheap. So the county is obviously spending a lot of money, a lot of our money, on this project, on designing these overpasses, on figuring out what it's going to look like. Money is already being spent. A lot of money is already being spent on this Places 29 corridor project that the businesses want to I don't think they want to scrap the whole thing, but they want to. They don't support the overpasses, certainly.
They would like to slow it down and have the Board of Supervisors intervene and start asking some of these questions. You know, the public sees the supervisors as the ones to hold accountable. The Planning Commission are people they appoint, but right now they would just like to get it elevated to a place where they can have a more in-depth discussion about some of their concerns.
Meadow Creek Parkway, first proposed in the late 1960s at a Ruritan meeting, is now making news again. First proposed as McIntyre Road Extended, and it was renamed by a university graduate student in the early 80s to make it more palatable to local citizens, so it got the name Parkway.
It's funny you say that, because they still call it McIntyre Road Extended. That's the VDOT name for this project.
Is it really?
That's the city. The city's portion going north from the rescue squad is called McIntyre Road Extended.
And it goes north up to Rio Road, right?
That's right.
It doesn't go to 29. It goes to Rio Road.
Once you cross Melbourne Road, you're in the county. And Melbourne Road is the road right near Charlottesville High School, and the football stadium is right there. And once you cross Melbourne, you're back in the county. And then that portion up through to KTEC, the Technical Education Center, is in the county. And that is called the Meadow Creek Parkway.
And it made news recently because a design for the interchange at McIntyre and the 250 bypass was now an official design was suggested.
Yep. Again, grade separation is the key. The whole discussion, and we have money from the federal government, thanks to John Warner and the team from Charlottesville and Albemarle that went up there and lobbied for this. We have money to build this interchange, $27-25 million, and the whole cost is going to be over $30 million, but it would elevate the road over a roundabout. An oval-shaped roundabout.
So McIntyre, you pass the skate park, which will be demolished, and then you go into a roundabout, which is underneath an overpass.
We don't want the skateboarders calling, Coy. The skate park will be relocated.
Oh, but it won't exist there anymore.
It'll be relocated. There will still be a skate park. They're committed to doing that.
Are we using public money to relocate that skate park?
That's part of the budget, yes.
Okay.
Yep. And then cars, the rescue squad, may have to find another home as well. But yeah, if you were heading out of Charlottesville north into this proposed interchange. And the news this week was that a design had been selected, preliminary design. And you would then go around this roundabout and under 250, the bypass, and then you could head on your way on the new Meadow Creek Parkway, which would be a two-lane parkway.
I've never understood, Brian, that we would spend $30 million on an interchange to move McIntyre Road traffic past the 250 bypass, only to take it up a few hundred yards to stop at Melbourne.
That's something that people are going to keep asking questions about. What do the traffic studies say about the success or failure of the Melbourne Road intersection, which will be grade level and have a traffic light right there? So there is some concern that you're moving the problem to a different point, and you don't want the traffic backing up north or south and causing more problems.
Why can't they just build one of those big traffic circles at Melbourne?
I don't know, Coy. That's a good question.
I mean,
another roundabout.
We can't afford another great separated interchange there at Melbourne, but why not another roundabout?
Yeah, good question. We'll look into that.
The Meadow Creek Parkway continues, and now proffers. A big discussion last week in Albemarle County regarding proffers by development. Remind us again, proffers are and why we're talking about them.
Proffers are a way for a developer to mitigate the cost of new development. And by that, I mean, if you build new development in Albemarle County, or in any county for people listening from outside, there's some cost to that development. You have to pay for roads, you have to pay for schools, you have to pay for that infrastructure. And proffers are a way a developer can voluntarily say, here's what I'm willing to do to incent you to approve this. I'm willing to bring this money to the table. The county has been frustrated over the years in that they don't have a real written policy about what they're expecting. So developers have been saying, listen, at every meeting we come to, you're asking for something different. Can't you just put on paper what you want? And a committee has been charged with looking at that. They came back with their recommendations. And I should say the committee had a developer on it, environmentalist, an economist, broad representation, had Chairman Ken Boyd from the Board of Supervisors, Eric Strucco from the County Planning Commission. So it was a committee that worked for a while on this, and they came back and said, yes, we have come up with a model. Well, they based it on Chesterfield County, just outside of Richmond, and they looked at what Chesterfield was doing, and they tried to come up with a model that would say, here's an objective per household cost factor for new development. And right now, just to give you some basis for comparison, we're getting about $3,200 in one-time cash money per house for a typical new development. And
again, to money that would go towards paying for infrastructure that would be needed as a result of the new development.
Towards the capital cost of things like transportation and schools. Those are the two best things to look at. And then what the committee recommended was actually that the county jump its expectations up to over $14,000 per house. And it varies with the type of house. I'll use the numbers for a single family detached, a traditional home. And other numbers the Board of Supervisors talked about went as high as $22,000. Now, up in Northern Virginia, they're getting, you know, up in the 30,000s per household. So it depends where you are in the state. But Albemarle County, as we've talked about on this program, has always been very low when it comes to cash proffers. Now, developers do proffer lots of other things. They'll make in-kind contributions for transportation, for school sites, you name it. But the question is, how do we take in all the impacts of this development and try to put on paper some sort of a policy that we can hang our hat on and help inform the developers what they need to come to the table with? This is a start. What's significant, the news here, I think, and I want to emphasize, is the broad support that this got, not only from the committee, but from the Board of Supervisors. The supervisors unanimously supported proffers in the amount of between 17 and 22,000. Now, Sally Thomas, in the end, didn't vote for the lower number, but all of them unanimously said, we have to do something. We have to establish a policy that raises the number. We're not sure how far that number should go, but let's at least get started. And now they're at about 17,500. So that's the new expectation. Now, that is not a proffer policy. That's just a number to get started with. Now the staff and the supervisors will probably spend the next 6 months trying to refine the policy. The development community is already asking lots of questions about this.
Understandably so.
But again, you know,
because this is a major shift from what we've been doing in the past.
Yep. But again, unanimous support by this board to change gears, to take a different approach. Look at Chesterfield. They picked that model because Chesterfield's approach has been challenged in court and was upheld as legal in Virginia. So they wanted to find something successful like that. So this conversation is going to continue. It's going to continue pretty quick here as Biscuit Run comes back before both the County Planning Commission and Board of Supervisors. We'll be looking at the proffers on that and other projects.
We're talking growth and development with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at seavilletomorrow.org. I do believe it's time for the speed round. Let's do speed round here with Brian Wheeler from Charlottesville Tomorrow. This week, we're looking at major downtown development. You like my little bell?
I'm ready for it.
Let's do major downtown developments. First up is the proposed CVS right there near the Lewis and Clark statue.
That is on hold. It's going to be impacted by City Council looking at changing the downtown zoning ordinance related to building heights. I think that developer is going to wait and see what shakes out there. Right now, there is no submission, so we're on hold on that one.
Waterhouse, which is on Water Street right across from the OXO restaurant. What's that going to be?
This is the Bill Atwood project. It has been approved, and they're expecting them to break ground on that very soon. That is going to be a 9-story condominium building, and that's going to be moving forward. So that's one of the 9-story buildings approved before this potential change in the zoning ordinance.
And that is breaks ground when?
Soon. They're pulling their financing together and waiting on some bond issues to be resolved.
First and Main on the Mall, and that's the block there that folks might remember years ago. What's his name? Lee Danielson wanted to tear down that whole block and put a big high-rise hotel.
It's across from the Jefferson Theater, and a lot of the facades have been boarded up for a long time. There's some issues there with historic preservation. The Board of Architecture Review is looking at that. This is the Keith Woodard project, and again, another 9-story building project. This was one of the ones that got everyone talking about 9-story buildings downtown. That's currently deferred, and what they're waiting on a revised site plan. When that comes in later in the summer, probably July, August, the BAR will get back involved with that.
The Central Fidelity Boxer Learning Building, again, right there on the Mall.
That one is interesting because Oliver Kuttner had a proposal that he was willing to go back to, again, looking at a 9-story building. But at different times, Mr. Kuttner said he'd limit it to 3 to 4 stories. Right now, the bottom line is there is no site plan submitted. The city staff expect them to follow their past proposals, but you know, right now there is nothing happening on that one.
The open parking lots on Water Street between Water and South Street.
These are one of them is city owned, one is owned by Charlottesville Parking Center, right in front of the Live Arts Complex. Those two lots are now the subject of a design competition, which is being run by the Charlottesville Design Center for the city of Charlottesville. So look for news on that front. They're collecting public input, but they're trying to come up with a long term plan.
Gleason, which is the old Gleason Hardware Building.
That one has been approved as well. That's another by right development that really didn't come in front of city council. So the planning commission did approve that, and that's moving forward. That's going to be a 6-story luxury condos.
201 Avon. This is that land that's around the big metal barn down there.
Yep, the Beck Cohen barn, which people know right off the Belmont Bridge. This one right now is not under review. They have until October 2007 to submit a final plan, but right now they're just waiting on a submission of that final site plan.
Corin Capshaw's Coal Tower, the famous Coal Tower in downtown Charlottesville. What's he going to do with that?
Again, here we're waiting and waiting and waiting. This is just past the Lexus building. The talk in the local news media has been he's going to come up with a proposal that protects that old coal tower and sort of keeps it in view of those new condominiums that would go there.
Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Corey.
This interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at SevillePodcast.com. Bill Kelso tomorrow, right here on the program.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.